So this number by end of all those methods, that advantage of being the influence in terms of specializing all the things. Yeah, on my right here is Honorable Mbizu. Next to him is Honorable Mustaki. Next to him is Honorable Mnet. Next to him is Honorable Panyosu. Followed by Honorable West. Honorable Kirby. Best bench, office lawyer, Honorable Sutega. Yours truly, Coach McQueen. They deployed me to say the truth. Yeah. I'll allow to introduce the team. But before that, she whispered when I came here that the collateral question is the related treatment. And Mr. Spaniana is with the related treatment. We should explain where are they not experienced, why are they not experienced. But they have a target covering and by the bullet. Before we do some other things, there are now actually certain individual things and we take it from the command.
Thank you, Chairman Sonan. Good afternoon and good evening to all the honourable members. It's a pleasure to be here today and to present to the committee its strategic plan 2007-2008. And also just to briefly on a few of the highlights of the commission of our past year. So my understanding of the briefing. Let's also just extend apologies from our chairperson Jodie Collison and also our CEO advocate Lisa Spaniani. He informed me that they have a long-standing prior engagement with the presidency, that there is a scenario plan which is currently underway and that they were invited to participate in that. And due to that, they decided to set a program for the parliamentary liaison program that I should come and stand in their state. And I hope that I managed to serve them well. I'm also supported today by colleagues from the parliamentary program. I have Mr. Misha Sahiri. She is a researcher which has joined the program recently. I hope you in the future you'll be seeing her more often in Parliament. Behind me on my left, I have Thomas Murray Edson, who comes from Keele University in the United States. He is doing a, as they call it, a summer internship with the Human Rights Commission. Behind me on my left is an intern who's been with the Human Rights Commission for a year, with Harriet Bruger. And she will be leaving us shortly and take up a position as a researcher at the Constitutional Court. So that is the team that I'm talking to today.
Thank you. Of course, the great horizon of this and full over the assistance. We have our friend, Open Democracy Advice Center here. Can you introduce yourself?
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Alison Tully. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Open Democracy Advice Centre, which is a centre which works on supporting the right to know, both on the Access to Information Act and the Protected Disclosures Act. I'm joined by my colleague Lorraine Martin, who runs our toll-free helpline and who provides support to whistleblowers and people who want to make requests for information. And we're also joined by a friend from the States, Sam Merschenberg, who works as a lobbyist in Washington, and who signed up today to come and see the proceedings in this committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, colleagues. Just to alert you, colleagues, that this meeting is live. As you're aware, in this it's live. They're not watching me at home, and those are having a JSP meeting. But again, Parliament, all the offices, they're following the site. Yeah, before I allow colleagues to set up the room, you can also remember to say something on the room, and I'll be moderating.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, you know, this meeting is not only a meeting to get the briefing of the whatever institution that's there. Chairperson, when you were actually in your preamble saying what it is of this nature to be happening on the 14th, which would be all the cluster of safety and constitutional affairs, the matters that would be defended. Though I do not know Julie's position in the Human Rights Commission is, but I find it difficult, sir, because among other things, while we'll be debating those of portfolio committees, the crux of the matter is that the Chapter 9 institution, there's a school of thought that they need to be reduced. Now, in the absence of the leadership, that is the catch, in inverted comma, not here, being here, sir, on Thursday, we'll be debating. The strategic plan, it is something of for thought, probably. We can have that meeting whenever it comes up, but to me, it's very critical that if the top hierarchy is not here, where we would be leveling questions direct and we would be soliciting answers from them if they're not here. You know, and at the same time, so we did actually said we are going to leave the house, which we are affecting the quorum in the house. But if Mr. Collison and the CEO, CEO, they knew about this meeting, I don't think they would have engaged themselves elsewhere. And I would have expected that if they would have requested us at any other time prior to the debate, I would have appreciated that, sir. But that's the reason why in my opening speech that I don't know her position. But I would not like to fire pressure to a person that does not would say, oh, well, yes, I'll pass the message to the person. However, sir, I'm prepared to listen to whatever input they have, but it will be difficult to ask questions, so pertinent questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Mayor.
Thank you, Chair. I share the same view, Chair. If this is a meeting that has been rescheduled, and if a rescheduling didn't fit them, I thought they should have rescheduled it to the right way to be here. And then even both of them not being there. At least one could have been here. My problem is the same as my honourable colleague. I don't know, and I have no reflection on these people. No reflection on them. But I think, and I don't want to be nasty, but I'll say it. You see, whenever there's a human rights issue, you'll find Mr. Collison up here and answering these things. And now that we're meeting now is not available. We have TV in Parliament as just like but definitely, even though we've left the House, we need to debate this by Thursday. Tomorrow is the last day. I mean, what do we debate and how will it influence our responses in the chamber? I'm actually over the UI. I'm not even prepared to ask any questions because I see that in a serious light. The next question is, were they present when they briefed the portfolio committee? Maybe then we will revert to the thing of seeing that people taking the portfolio committee more important than the committee, the EGP. And this is the thing that is starting to worry us. Well, we have a very big role, according to the constitution, to play in our provinces. And I have specific things of my province and my region. Thank you, Chief.
Yeah, thank you for this, for the response. Yeah, in terms of rescheduling of meeting, Julia said this morning we met the Minister of Justice and Agency. We changed the meeting, like what we changed with you. On Thursday, we met the public protector and the whole team. So I did himself and the the same arrangement where we change the meeting process is supposed to meet you and then person. And change the meeting of the commission on the equality. They were here. Journalists themselves and the whole team, they were here. And I understand the colleagues when they said it's not compatible with them. That's why Colourful and Fayan and Amit here. But they couldn't really see some of the problems with us. But we'll send a follow up and check as to whether they are aware about. We're not just the one who made it say, there's nothing to do with you. We're not sitting there the same day. But the human rights issues are so important here. Because some of us, we are saying this unit is event-driven. It's not supposed to be like that. It's supposed to be proactive and deal with issues, and that's where one of our citizens say, what are shortcomings? Where can our citizens balance? And I don't see how do you ask it? And we said they're going to pass this vote of this unit. How do you pass it? Let's look at it in the same boat. Let me look at it. Yeah, colleagues, I know that you are concerned, and it's my concern as well. Yeah, maybe a question to you before you start with the input. Will you be able to deal with all the questions? I'm going to the first question that someone has.
As head of programs in the parliamentary program, I'm part of the senior management for the Human Rights Commission. Come to this stage, I have answered the other questions, but I should be able to answer most questions. If there is any question which is particularly personal, which I can't answer, and I hope there won't be one, I can certainly ensure that answers do come. Chair, this is I'm certainly going to convey what has been expressed here back to the Chair and the CEO. As far as I can record, this is the first time that we've been called by this committee to come and do a briefing of this nature. We usually go each year to the committee in the National Assembly, the Portfolio Committee on Justice, and quite a large delegation usually comes down for that briefing. Possibly it's a misunderstanding from the commission side as to the exact purpose of this meeting yesterday. My statement and invitation was that it was a briefing on the strategic plan. But I think perhaps I'll ask the Chair and CEO to engage with the Chair first and in order that these kinds of misunderstandings can be cleared up and especially as well as these kinds of scenarios in the future.
Yeah, I think there is a thing out of there. I won't say because of all, there are things of this kind. We are taking this as the undermining us here. Parliament consists of two houses. The legal assembly is not parliament. Yeah. Oh, why? Honorable Air, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, I see what is in effect by the Human Rights Commission. In fact, probably you might find that the removing the chair prioritized the scenario planning. What we call the
he has never came here. He has never managed to come here before. Yeah, you know, when something you don't know, you don't know to wait and to support it. Because you've never been there before. But I think I'm confident that it's part of the process. But, you know, these committees, you can see that these are very serious, highly committed gentlemen. They are saying that we have left the city today for more to come here. There's a meeting of shepherds that I was attending to, even after this part. To me, I think one of the most critical things that would have appreciated, in addition to the people, was if the commission would have afforded us an opportunity to have recommendations. We don't have I can see the aspect in there. Probably it's the internal matter. I think the secretary we talk about. But I think all of us here, we are in the same boat. For the justice facilitation question in a way. But I would say, I think generally, as you know, we tend to ask the patients to go to home when we find that the people, the cylinder is not here. But I think because it's the first time to come, it will be unfair because we don't understand how we operate the policy of the committee. Generally, departments are asked to go back to Victoria, most of them, and so on. But I think for now, because we must give a benefit of doubt to say, no, we are learning about the committee, that I would propose, Chair, that we continue.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. I will actually turn for bringing them out. on the issue about the documents, I think they were circulated back. I think, yeah, I can bring them out as well. I can vouch for them. The person who circulated last week, I thought maybe our secretary would be closer. Yeah. Oh, yeah, so that's all with this. Yeah, no, I would extra copy the colleague who can provide them to you. Can you do that too? Without any waste of time, can I hand over to you to talk to us about this?
Certainly, sir, thank you.
That's
just about again, the chair could give me some direction in terms of how long you would want me to give the input for, and then I can either speed up or slow down the presentation. There are essentially two presentations, one on the strategic plan for the year ahead, and the other presentation is the highlights from our past year. I can either do them concurrently or I can do them separately. I'm in the hands of the
state.
Well,
if you say that, you present both, so we'll ask questions, so just to how long do you think you can take? What we prefer is to have enough time for questions. You know, the president can listen for 5%, you know, more than that. If you're really grateful to the president, you know.
Okay, could I aim for between 20 minutes, 25 minutes, see if I can go at that speed and I won't concentrate on each and every slide. We have already submitted the documents to everyone.
Yeah, it can be 20 or whatever that. Oh, you'll make that be. Oh, that be good. Thank you.
I need to try and demonstrate my knowledge.
Okay, you can look for the hit now.
Important meeting and that it provides an opportunity for the Commission to be accountable to Parliament as to the work that it is that it does. And it also creates legitimacy for the Commission as a public institution when we have here before such our strategic plan. The vision of the Human Rights Commission is that the constitutional body of the order that supports democracy. So we also intend being an effective organization, being a focal point for human rights practices to be accessible to everyone. And as you have shown, members will be interested in, especially when it comes to accessibility in terms of poor and rural communities, but also accessibility in terms of the Commission has more recently raised some very serious obstacles for the Commission with the hostage drama, which we have at the Western Cape office. And it has ensured and raised great debate within the Commission as to how do we remain accessible to the public whilst at the same time ensuring the safety of those who work for the Commission on a daily basis. The mission of the Commission broadly reflects that which is stated in the Constitution. The mandate of the Commission is set out in Section 184 of the Constitution, and as it is a piece of legislation which provides us our mandate being prior to the Commercial Access Information Act and to the reaffirmation of unfair discrimination, commercial policy of sexual and unfair discrimination act. In terms of the outcomes of the Commission, we have retained and worked here a strategic plan that we work towards upholding human dignity, facilitating access to all human rights, the right to equality, economic and social rights. And what we added this year in terms of an outcome is also freedom from crime and violence. There's great emphasis on the issue at the moment, even in the President's State of the Nation speech this year, great emphasis has been placed on crime and violence and how it impacts on human rights. And so we've added that into one of the outcomes in terms of our strategic plan, and we'll run through with you in the presentation as to how that would be carried on. In terms of new restructuring, which is in place in this year's strategic plan, which makes it different from other years, is there are three new programs which have been created. One is the Parliamentary Liaison Legislation and Treaty Body Monitoring. Up until this stage, this program in the Commission has been largely charged with the responsibility of looking at new legislation that's coming through Parliament and commenting on it, participating in the submission-making process. We're going to be extending what it was a unit, it's now a program of the Commission, to also look at our international treaty body obligations, our international human rights law obligations, and how, as a national human rights institution, we should be engaging at that level. It's just to mention a very new area for human rights commissions throughout the world to start engaging at this international human rights level, and one which we are looking forward to, and which we hope that as South Africans we'll be able to lead the way in this area. We'll also start to be doing some work at a provincial parliamentary level. Up until this stage, little work has been done, almost no work, I would say, at the provincial parliamentary level, and we're going to be doing work at that level, which I mean is very significant. We've also created a new program on information and communications, and we'll run through next what is about that, what this program will be doing, and then also our special program for community outreach and advocacy program, and we'll run through that later as well. We've also created the coordinator positions. This past year, we created four positions dealing with children, older persons, HIV, AIDS, and non-nationals. So this year, we're going to be adding four more dealing with business and human rights, crime and human rights, disability coordinator, and equality coordinator. Essentially, what these coordinators do, they're appointed at a relatively senior level within the Commission attached to the CEO's office. And the idea is that they coordinate activities around these areas within the Commission. The Commission has often been criticized that it's not visible enough in certain areas, and we've recognized that. And in order to address this criticism of the Commission, we have created these coordinator positions which try and then harness work, which is done around, for example, issues around disability or children, and to mainstream it through the Commission and to support it through the Commission. that should quickly be organogram is quite difficult to read and see. It's quite small, but I think where the NCOP committee would be particularly interested is our provincial officers. We have provincial officers in 8 of the 9 provinces. We will be opening this year. In fact, we currently are recruiting and finding resources to open up a office in the northwest. That is the last outstanding province where we do not yet have a provincial office. Up until this stage, we have been served by Johannesburg office. But just in terms of where we are, Northern Cape, we're in Uppington. In Cape, we're in Port Elizabeth. We're looking at possibly relocating to East London, Seaside, we're in Bloemfontein, KZN, we're in Durban, we're in Cosmo, we're in Polokwane, and in Mpumalanga, we're in Nelspruit. And the function of the provincial officers is to carry out the work of the commission in the provinces and to make the commission visible in the provinces. And each province is coordinated by a provincial manager. And we would certainly encourage members of the Parliament to interact with these provincial officers. In terms of our commissioners, they are there to raise the profile of the commission, make strategic interventions, respond to human rights issues. In terms of the chief executive officer, just to highlight a few things, he's responsible to ensure that the programs meet the strategic objectives and national priorities, and to strategically position the commission. He is also responsible for the financial management of the commission, also for the then corporate services, which looks at issues around admin, IT, and supply chain management, and that provides the backbone to the commission of the administrative and logistical support in order that the programs may carry out the work in the mandate of the commission. Human resources have also been very busy in the last year engaging in a number of issues in order to be able to attract and retain skills in the commission, looking at various policies, staff development. They've been hugely active in the last year. If you turn to what it is that the commission actually does, the first program is in our creation, which is our education, training and public awareness. And they are essentially responsible for conducting training, workshops, seminars, presentations, provide in-house capacity building, secure some areas of access to information and quality. They also deal with institutionalization of human rights with education. They deal with the education department, for example. They do community outreach. The members would be particularly interested in this. They've come up with a new model for this year ahead where they actually want an education officer to go out and find and identify a particular community, particularly out in the poor and rural areas, and not just to go and do a once-off workshop with that community, but actually go out and establish and identify the needs of that community. And then over a 2 to 3 month period, work with that community in terms of education and awareness raising around human rights and actually address issues within that community. And after working with this community in a more holistic fashion to find out whether they have in fact seen an impact in terms of human rights. And it's very much there's a shift in terms of the community to try to measure the impact that we're having rather than really conducting ad hoc training programs in order that one can report to Congress that you've done X number. Something that is also very exciting within the commission is the development of e-learning. E-learning is very much the way to go in terms of the world where people can learn about human rights or could be any other topic via the internet, via the computer. And we currently are about to launch e-learning in the areas of Pahia, Saputo, and general human rights. And I would really encourage members when it's launched to go visit our website and to go into these e-learning programs and to spread the word within your constituencies and provinces about it. Because the way it is set up and established is that they there are three different levels of learning. So it could be your student or community worker who wants to go on a walkabout, essentially through the computer program, and to obtain some knowledge about Taia or equality or human rights. Or at some stage, we will also be introducing far more advanced types of learning, where one will also be able to get a certificate for completion of the course. And this could be used, for example, in government departments, where one would want, for example, government employees to know about Taia and what their responsibilities are in this area. So this is an enormously exciting area in which the Commission is getting involved in, which we will be rolling out and to show members will be knowing about more. Legal services deals with the complaints that you receive from the public regarding human rights violations and the investigation and issues to resolve them. Our research documentation program this program was initially set up to align itself with the mandate of the Commission in terms of Section 184, Subsection 3 of the Constitution, which requires that the Commission seek information from government departments each year on the progressive realization of various economic and social rights. Last year we launched our sixth economic and social rights report, and we currently are undergoing a process in the Commission to reevaluate our monitoring process and work out if there's a way for us to fine tune it and possibly do it in a different manner, and to go from annual reporting to possibly reporting on a 3-year timeline, which would fit in possibly better with government. I've spoken already about the parliamentary liaison legislation and judicial body monitoring, as this is my program, it's yes, in my heart, but it means I'm not chatting about it, but they are going to be some very exciting services this year. Information and communications, I've already spoken about, and they basically have anything to do with media, production of information, production of annual reports that goes with media, information and communication. And then we have our special programs, the coordinators that I've spoken about. I'm going to go through some of the highlights, and then if they become a bit more familiar with where it is that we're going with the coordinators within the Commission. There's been the CSAT project. I would hope that Project Protect and CGB have already briefed you that you would already have heard a little bit about the CSAT project. It's an EU-funded project which runs over 3 years. It's a joint project between Public Protectors, CGB and the Human Rights Commission. It's run in three provinces, KZN, Eastern Cape and Limpopo. And it really is there to provide support to the chapter nine and to enhance the capacity of the chapter nine, and also to provide active advocacy support to civil society organizations. As part of the CSAC project, we have then based within the Commission a project which is called COM-Out, which is a community outreach and advocacy unit. And the idea is that COM-Out is in those three provinces which are identified for this program, that they reach people out in marginalized communities in order to promote human rights and also to promote things such as trainers, step-by-step guides for accessing services in order that, for example, your economic and social rights do not remain paper rights, but actually become rights in reality for people who live city out in your poor and your rural area. And also just to promote work with NGOs and civil society bodies and your community. This is just running through in much more detail what it is that the program will be doing. If there's anything there which catches the eye of any of the members, I would be glad to answer those questions in more detail. And then at the back there's some financial information, looking at the baseline allocation of the Commission, which as you can see is steadily increasing over the years, and also in terms of our strategic plan, and I'm sure that you're going to put them, but just to run through last year, just to really try and give a bit of a flavour to the committee as to what it is that we get up to as the Human Rights Commission. In terms of the commissioners, what I would like to highlight is our public hearings, which as the commission we view as very important. Not only are they public accountability mechanisms, but they also provide a space for different organizations, for different government departments to come forward and to share their views on issues in the human rights framework, and for the Human Rights Commission to exercise its monitoring function. In this past year, we had hearings on school-based violence. These hearings were held down here in the Western Cape in late September, if I recall. We're currently in the process of putting together that final report. As members are aware, that throughout the country there are regularly instances of school-based violence, and I think a dire need to address these issues within the human rights framework and also establish what it is that we can do. We also had a public hearing on initiation. This was a joint public hearing working together with the CRL Commission. The Commission deals with issues around culture, religious, and language, and we also awaiting that report. And then last year, this time, if I recall correctly, it was the 14th of June last year, just before Youth Day, we released the Right to Basic Education report. That was from a hearing we had had in October 2005. And as the Commission, we are now currently engaged in a process of following up on the various recommendations that the Commission made. And already the Department of Education, within 90 days of us releasing that report, replied to our report, and they went through each and every recommendation, and they told us what it was that they agreed with, what they did not agree with, what they were already working on. And it was quite remarkable because out of the 23 or so recommendations that we made, there were only two recommendations that they in fact did not agree with us, but they gave us reasons. And so many of the suggestions that we made were already issues that either the department had identified or issues that the department agreed that they would look at. For example, issues around inclusive education and children with disabilities, and how very often in some of your rural areas they are totally excluded from the education system. And the department's example on that issue came back and acknowledged that this was an area where they needed to commissioners recently have also taken, in terms of a strategic intervention, to go and visit rural communities. So for example, they've gone to farm schools in Ottensdal, farming communities in Rawsonville, villages in Sekakune, such as Dapaza, Damakuru, communities in Dalmas, affected by cholera, communities in Kwanabuchle, in Eastern Cape, Oldberg, and Structures, and Uffington, and Kimberley, affected affected communities in Mafefa, and dealing with issues of access to education in Kwanabuchle. So not only necessarily rural communities are examples here, but they really have been, in last year, in getting out there to actually see on the ground what it is that is going on. Just highlighted some of the issues that have hit the media, such as the opinion on the complaint which was lodged with the Commission regarding Mr. Cantrell, who's known to everyone in the room, where they'll not yet engaged in hate speech by comparing some of the messages by Israel and the war with Lebanon, that was not very much of a debate. In terms of the CEO, the Commission finds itself called upon more and more by other national human rights institutions, particularly those in Africa, to come and visit the Human Rights Commission and to come visit us and to learn from us. And this is a role which the Commission is more than willing to play. We recently just had the South Sudan Commission, which has just been appointed, to come and visit us and to learn from us in terms of what it is that we have learned in the past 10 or 11 years that we have operated. We've also had delegations from Kenya and the Tanzanian Human Rights Commission come and visit us during the past year. We've also been engaged in the past year in a number of community dialogues throughout the country, looking at issues around crime and its impact on human rights. And this culminated in a national conference which we had on Human Rights Day, looking at crime and human rights. And certainly one of the issues which came out and which struck the Commission that was significant was that the existing constitutional and legal framework which we have in South Africa is certainly sufficient in terms of when it comes to dealing with crime, and that it's putting into proper context some of the perceptions around crime and the constitution, and the common perception of the constitution is in fact crime and perpetrator friendly, and that these are perceptions which we need to deal with. But from a constitutional perspective and a legislative perspective, we've got the framework there to deal with crime. It's more in the implementation that we need to look at seriously at issues. Then if it's looking at issues around financial management, so that's need to push my finger there so quickly. In terms of the parliamentary liaison program, we are getting more based in the CEO's office, but we've done a number of briefings in Parliament, such as briefing Parliament on the Rights-Based Education Report, also briefing Parliament on issues around women and children in prison, the impact of imprisonment on children when their mothers, for example, are imprisoned, and looking at the role of parole boards and discussing with the Correctional Service Portfolio Committee and Parliament, what it is that the Human Rights Commission could be doing to draw to the attention of parole boards issues around the impact of imprisonment. Civil unions, well, as we all know, was a highly contested piece of legislation. We were also involved in it. Perhaps one of the more difficult submissions and appearances that we've had before committee. And then also just issues around, and this sort of gives an indication as to how the commission works. In terms of the sexual offences law, as members are aware, there is a relatively strong groupings out there in civil society which deals with women's issues and with children's issues. But the Commission noted that when it came to persons with mental disabilities, that this sector was relatively weak. And so what we did there is we brought together the relevant role players in that sector and workshopable with them, and then made submissions to the Justice Portfolio Committee. And we were very satisfied that many of those submissions that we made, which was due to these consultations, were actually taken on board by that committee. And so that through the work of the Commission and as an institution supporting democracy, we could bring the voices of those who are possibly most marginalized in our community to Parliament and actually have their voices heard. And these kinds of ways that the Commission finds it very exciting to contribute towards building a democracy in this country. Media and communications, our occurrences in terms of the media seem to be on the upward at the moment. We're averaging at least 3 appearances a week in the media somewhere. It's been noted yesterday that there's a conference about and our internet, our website, we're hitting 780,000 hits per month. That's a pretty respectable figure, I'm told, by those in the lower end area. In terms of our coordinators, there really are. Most of them joined the Commission in September last year, finding their feet and finding each other in terms of the Commission in order to ensure that we can get out of them and ensure that they carry out what it is that we want them to. Just to give you some examples, the older person coordinator has been involved in setting up a monitoring tool in order to monitor what happens in old age homes. As we know from time to time in the media, we hear about incidences of elder abuse taking place in old age homes. So that's where she's been involved in. Our coordinator dealing with nationals has also been very involved at an enhanced level to create more awareness around issues of nationals. And I think our HIV AIDS coordinator is almost joked about in the commission that we think that he may be getting an even greater media profile than our chief at the early college, and he really seems to be in the media quite a lot. And it's really done a lot. I think the commission in the past has been criticized for not being visible enough in this area. He really has done a lot, and maybe more recently the Human Rights Commission has also been involved in recent developments around the South African National AIDS Council, and has also contributed significantly towards the formation, being part of the and contributed to the National Strategic Plan on HIV/AIDS, which has been recently released. Another area where we've been involved in last year's, as members are aware, there's been a number of violent attacks on Somali nationals in Cape Town, Motherwell, Port Elizabeth, and we've been very involved there. Last year, Human Rights Day with the Damia in Cape Town, we were involved in a number of interventions in the Matamele area, dealing with the attacks that have been happening there. As I said, human resources have been very active in the last year, looking after employees and showing that we retain staff within the commission. We conducted a very interesting organizational health survey, which has just been released, and which at a senior management level we are considering very seriously in order to see how it is that we can improve the commission to make it attractive to people out there, to make it a place where people want to come and work. We currently have 102 out of 114 posts. The slide just gives you an indication as to where it is that these posts are within the commission. And then we currently got a vacancy rate of 9.8%. Filling up positions that this does fall within the fall in the range of what is acceptable. We currently are in the process of filling a large number of positions within the commission to start the new financial year, and one will see lots more new faces with us in the commission. And then just admin, new sort of management systems, new learning blueprints, a lot of new IT policies, state offices and premises, education, training, public and awareness. Let's just get some stats on the number of interventions that we've been having. Perhaps just to highlight and note that in the past year there were 198 interventions which are aimed at rural communities. Really have been trying to get out there. Most of our provincial offices are based in large cities. So we really have been trying to make a concerted effort to get out into these rural areas. In terms of legal services, I've already mentioned the public hearings that we have had. It's also just to give an indication of to the kinds of issues that come through our legal services, issues dealing with healthcare, food, water, child rights violations, issues around school fees, around privacy, and then maybe just in terms of some of the cases, just to highlight the kinds of issues which come to the Human Rights Commission in the area of disability. There was a case where an attorney did not have wheelchair access to court and therefore could not appear on behalf of her client in the courtroom. The commission intervened in that case. Obviously, it has involved the Department of Justice, but also the Department of Public Works that provides for the two departments of justice. The outcome of that case is that there will be a process within the respective departments to ensure that all our courts are accessible to everyone in this country. In terms of race, just the number of complaints. This one complaint was given us there, where the complaint was in fact evicted from a holiday resort because he was accompanied by two black children. If I recall correctly, because we've had a number of these cases involving holiday resorts for these. I think Deborah Pepper got extensively involved in one of these cases. You may well, in fact, remember that program on television when the commission took it up. Quite frankly, the mediations that were followed was put very bluntly to the holiday resort that they would have to close down if they wanted to restrict access to people on the basis of race. I think at first the resort society would close down, but then realized that clearly this was not viable. And then actually came to the party and was willing to change. And then as well, another case which hit the headlines as well was in terms of abuse, where a young learner had allegedly been raped by the teacher. The teacher was arrested, released on bail, and arrived back in the same classroom to teach that learner. And perhaps a bit disturbing when, in fact, the commission had actually resorted to litigation to get an interdict against the department and against the school to actually ensure that the mechanisms that were in place to discipline this teacher were in fact followed, and that the teacher was suspended in order that the right of the learner to access to education was not impacted upon, in order that the learner could in fact return to school. In terms of research and documentation, I've already mentioned that we launched our 6th Economic and Social Rights Report. We also hosted an Equality in Data. It's based within the research department, so we are tracking very carefully what is happening with the establishment of equality courts in South Africa, and looking around issues as to their accessibility, whether they are taxing views, whether the legislation, which is one of the most important pieces of legislation in this country, alongside the constitution and other legislation such as PAYA, whether in fact it's being used as much as it ought to be used in this country, and trying to look at where the blockages are and what the stumbling blocks are that are ensuring that people are not having access to these courts, because they're clearly not being used as much as what they want to be used. And in terms of access to information, I think we've got Alison Tilly yesterday. I perhaps should be saying a word or two that we certainly in the last year had the Openness Awards, which was conducted in conjunction with ODAC, which Alison represents here today. Just to go on there, the awards, they have the Openness Responsiveness Awards, the Deputy Information Officer of the Year Awards, the Right to Not Access of the Year Awards, the Best 2-Year Usage Engagement with PAYA. As members are aware, PAYA is such an important piece of legislation. Apartheid was characterized by secrecy and not giving information to people. And it's very important that it's one of the few countries in the world that recognizes the right of access to information in terms of our constitution, that we try and promote it. And this is one of the methods which the commission uses to try and promote access to information, to having these awards each year, to have government departments, for example, buying to see who is number one, as we can see here. In terms of how we rated government departments, defense came in at number one. Are we surprised? Maybe not. You know, in the military, you come and do something that's pretty good at following out orders. But land defense came in second, you know, which is good when one considers some of the issues which we face in that sector. Advocacy programs, which are small, maybe members from the provinces, which you more interested to know more about that program. But perhaps just in closing, I think for everyone in the Human Rights Commission, and to mention what Dr. Collison said when presented our strategic what organizational and institutional arrangements may be, and one of the members mentioned the work of the CARE ASMR committee, which we have been involved in. Whatever the outcome is of that committee, we are certain that it will contribute towards strengthening of democracy and human rights in this country. And we are looking forward to that report from the CARE ASMR committee, which we believe is due out in June. So I feel as if I've been running a race. I've been speaking so quickly. I hope I haven't spoken too fast. But if there are any questions or members would like additional information, I am more than willing to answer questions. Thank you, Chair.
Wow. Thank you very much, Julia. That was cool. Thank you very much. Yeah. Well, I'm going by our two colleagues who were in the meantime presenting up in the house while the other company was going to be in the house. So the pandemic over the level of the duty for the. Yeah. There we are, colleagues. Help to say that she's ready. She can't wait to say our question. She's issuing a question. As I said, I don't want to hear from you, your colleagues.
Mr.
Jerry
says,
Mr.
Chairperson,
thank you, Chairperson. We have such as soon as they are, it can be direct questions indeed. Does that serve you to start off with the Human Rights Commission? What is your relationship between the Commission, gender equality, the public protector, and the National Prosecuting Authority? This question is based on litigation. It's spoken about litigation, and I have looked up for the litigation that you people are making. But it seems as if the litigation goes as far as your investigation. We have learned from the public protector that there are cases they investigate, like any other institution that they make referral. But we don't know your function, whether you also do the referral, and if you do the referral, why do you litigate? If you litigate, where do you take those cases? This is why we ask this question. We have seen Mr. Collison on various issues, appearing in the mass media. After speaking there, it's just like in the system. We don't seem to see what has happened there. That was good, nice, shocking, but what happened? Is this commission having kids enough to buy? You have spoken about the community outreach. How do you reach them out? The problem we have, people don't even know the difference between the public protector and the human rights. There's always that confusion. Now, if you have the public reach, how do you do it? I know you say we write letters, we talk to the TV, we talk. They watch high school men in the rural, deep rural. Because human rights is not the human right in town here. It's human rights for all humans. Let me find a question. An incident here, which is very vocal. And we haven't had you people speaking. And I would have loved to direct this to Mr. Collison. There was a case where a farmer in Limpopo shot a young fellow, mistakenly killed with a dog. We didn't hear the human rights group was more vocal about that. Well, where is human rights then? Also, the rights of the Western of protecting animals, but their rights also.
If it was a drop, was it livable, would that drop to be shot at? Now, that is the role we would like to know and take into account when we start talking about the function of this chapter 9. Because there's duplication. Human rights is doing investigation. Commission for Gender Equality is doing investigation. Plastic Protector is doing investigation. So we can go on and on, all of them that are doing investigation. Where do we draw a line? Now let me come to another question on your, there's so many, there's no number, but it's also on the strategic plan. On your page, I hope I have the right, you're also looking at it. Your left. Yes. On page 13, where you, in the second bulletin, that is the operation, education, training, and public awareness. You actually say you conduct a community outreach and awareness program by titling in every lane. I've had a very meeting of the human rights very court in the area. Now, as a public representative, surely I'll have had one day or so. How do you deal with communities? Coupled with that, you have on page 14, investigate individuals and specific complaints of a human rights violation. Complaints. It is a recurring stigma. What you people do on that one. I know the other question is saying to provide appropriate redress and resolve the dispute regarding foundation. It's different. It's a specific. This person do the thing. The next time, just the same thing. If you leave it in, what do you do? Call it a default. Now, let me make this as my last question. I'm afraid I wouldn't be asking questions because the culprit is not here. But don't tell my friend I said it's a culprit. I haven't had you people vocal on sexual offenses. And we don't know that. Those are the rights of the people. And if you don't pronounce yourself, how do you do your outreach? Because sexual offenses. I read in the newspaper yesterday where a 10-year-old girl was raped by her own brother. And in the same incident, coincidentally in the same area, the other one of 11-year-old was accompanying an elderly person to go in and get wood in the bush. She was raped to death. Another family. Those are the incest of human rights. How you vocal about these things? Let's hear you more, because if come when we say outcry, we can do away with it, but in chapter 9, we should be done. We have spoken to everyone. I would like to hear you more on this, what do we expect of you? Let's know you more about this. Thank you.
You talk about, you actually have Passing away of course during a week or so. And that is one
also of domestic violence. I think we're too much quiet about that. And as I raised this morning to the Minister of Justice, you know, access to justice for poor people is very costly. It's too costly. It's taking away your my people's, our people's rights. Because you go to, but you have to pay such a lot of money to get to a court, and then even the whole justice thing, you take money from it. Even if our people don't have it. Even me, I mean, if you look at an intercity or something, they're talking about thousands of that. So it's expensive. And maybe just to bring that down, to have access to all people, to the justice more. Then I see you monitoring, to be monitoring equality courts. I would like to know how functional are they. Are they working? And what is the amount of cases that goes to this? And what is the focus area? What is happening here? I've almost fallen into the trap of, you're not worrying about us, because I won't worry about you, but I pulled myself out of that hole. And thank you very much, at least we appreciate you being here and being committed. Thank you.
That's what the Honorable
Let me just shut that down. On the question of the accessibility of your services, you know, when Commissioner Colapen was the director for Lawyers for Human Rights, and the services of that organization were much more accessible to rural areas like the area from which I come. In the Eastern Cape. Now, from time to time, you will see people going to that office, that ego, and went to the South African Human Rights Commission, seeking the assistance that they normally receive when he was still the director of Lawyers for Human Rights, which assistance is no longer there now. Then those people end up having to go to constituency offices, which are least equipped to deal with matters related to the activities in which you are involved. Now, the question of expansion, what hinders you from expanding to the most remote areas? I see you mentioned months later here. Yes, that is a remote area, but very few people know about the Human Rights Commission, and very few people have access to the services that you render. Now, the question is how do you think you will be able to expand to reach those areas? What target group do you have in mind that can further transmit information and awareness about human rights? Target groups like schools, how would you use schools? How would you use churches for purposes of creating more awareness about human rights? The second one is the vacant post. Why do you have vacant posts? What happens to you from filling those posts? Is it a question of people having no interest in the commission, or do some people leave, and for what reason would they leave the commission? Would it be related to remuneration, or what would be the reason? In fact, in terms of the task that you have on hand, the your complement of 140 to me for South Africa is very small. That's why I'm saying more than 2 million people in the internship know nothing about your commission. More than 2 million people. I know because I know when their appointment rights are still in existence, to what extent they use it, and to what extent they are still looking for it now, and one is at a loss as to where they can be referred, except to the constituency offices. And I don't know to what extent you are working with constituency offices, which are not institutions that only serve parties, individual party members, but serve everybody in terms of the funding that they receive from the taxpayer.
Thank you. That was Honorable Manuel. Honorable West.
Thank you. I would also like to thank the Commission for their presentation. You think I might ask you just on page 16, this is of the annual report highlights. Your column vacancy, number of vacant posts, number of posts, 67 number of posts, 462, page 52, 37, and 35, that has going down, but that's just the other one. In this book here, the strategic plan 2007-8, you state within that restructuring additions, creation of four coordinator positions, crime and human rights coordinator. So crime is I take it, is quite a serious matter at the moment. And then if you go, that's on page 16, you go to page number 13. That is at page number 14. It says operations legal services to provide appropriate redress and resolve security violations. And what is your opinion? This is more the opinion of the Human Rights Commission. If somebody has been injured in an armed holdup or through some criminal activity, the person has been sentenced, but this person is now paraplegic and needs medication, has not got medical aid funds, something happening all the time. There is a fund for victims of crime, but not one cent that's already paid out of that fund as far as I know. How would somebody coming to the Human Rights Commission find redress in such a circumstance, and what is the Human Rights Commission's opinion on a fund for victims of crime and the fact that it has not been utilized?
Thank you very much, Honorable Sylvie.
Sure. I'd like to know from the lady whether they attend court cases or not. Because why I put that question, you get a lot of court cases in my area. We get an husband and wife in court, and at the end of the day, the husband got the house, and the wife got no house, and she got it from the child or so. What does he do in that type of cases? Do you follow it up? Do you investigate it?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
apologize for my late and yes, I also missed the greater part of the presentation. I just picked up two matters which I would like to ask a question about. As far as fire is concerned, the Access Information Act. Chief, this is my experience of the application of that act. It's not very clear. I mean, particularly if you're dealing with a State Department, to get information out of the State Department, and I tried it in both capacities as a practicing lawyer and as a member of parliament, and then particularly from land affairs. It's now 3 years, Chairperson, it's not longer, that I suffered and tried to get hold of certain information from the Department of Land Affairs. I may have missed the presentation, I may have misunderstood it, but if that is the case, I must say I'm disappointed about the lack of, say, 6 months and longer, if you are lucky. I was not that lucky, I'm still not lucky, to get information out of the State Department. I don't see how is it possible that I can maybe take refuge to the Human Rights Commission. If so, just give me an answer to that. I will gladly make use of that. Thank you, Chief.
That's a good one. Yeah, questions are good. Let me offload my brother and send me some time.
Come.
Yeah, Honorable Mayor, I've got one question that we need to ask you before I can follow that.
Thank you for that, I see. You know, I've missed it from this occasion from soccer, and even the strike outside came in legal aid. The Constitution says, and I don't have one with me now to quote directly, but if you are terminally ill and you need specific medication, or not very sick, but something about medication that you must get,
emergency medical aid,
and you know the problems you have with medical aid that are profitable, driven by profit to access it. I also fall in that category. My medical treatment is kicking in January. By doing this clinic, and they don't want to put these things on chronic. And now, much more for poorer people. You see, and I think that is one of the biggest problems. That's the problem that even in the health, our ministry is fighting. That's the whole area of medication for the poor and making it, for us to get it.
Thank you. How often do you, because I saw that it was in one line where you mentioned all that. How often do you interact with the staff to get their opinion about the condition? How often do you meet them? Because I just said it's only one line here, you know. The staff has just one line about it. So you said that as well. Secondly, this is a central question, that's why I wanted to go to media, but the other way you would take. There are people who believe that you must justify your existence. I want your opinion about it. You must justify your existence. This review of Chapter 9 Institution is based on, to repeat, the spread between our deputy minister and myself about the legal issue, about political prisoners, and generally, was this change of ways between our deputy minister of justice and the court. And that calls for people to say, you must justify your existence. You remember when in my opening statement I said, to some people you are event-driven. You are not proactive. You don't do initiating some other things. You are reactionary. You are responding only. Rather than initiating some other things, to use corrective measures. The question about all this nonsense I'm saying is, what do you say to people who are saying you must justify existence for this
commission to exist to the commission, not to be swallowed by some other department or some other institution within the department. Why do you think it's a particular position? Something about the initiation, whether we talk about the initiation thing. How does it check in, and evaluation, how does it come in? For some of us are custodians of some different cultures in the region. Just to know how does it check in and want to know. And then, as you have a remark by the news of Italian, very interesting that the it was reflected here. That you check if it is an hate speech that follows in your constitution, it's a nice way to be lawyers, to think about the thing of court number, court number, they have get it on. If it is a hate speech, I thought it would be joking about the hard people somewhere. Interesting to know is that how is the feeling of the commission as far as that is concerned. Should it my rights were violated one day here in Paris? I don't want to vote for one particular thing. It's a head. But because of my loyalty to my organization has taken a particular line. I had to vote. But consciously, because I met my mother at the weekend. Now, when I came on Tuesday, I was supposed to vote for that particular activity. And I felt myself, but my rights are violent because I don't want to do this. Because I don't want to come to you. And I come to you, we go to assess you. You know, even now I'm still that man. I'm getting covered from that. Because it's stupid. Not why. Now I know. I want to know if I need someone to come to you to rescue. So please, I don't want to mention that. But I think you can say that the mission is successful. Now, I think my colleague tried to on disability within the community. I think what you need to do is to up marketing strategy. I don't know how can it be, but I think you're not doing enough for people to know what you are doing. Because I think you are doing more than what people know, but they do not know. And people will question as to whether you are right to exist as a commission. Because you're looking enough to market yourself. I mentioned the saloon story, the saloon thing by Judy itself. That's really it. But the concern raised by Honorable Meg about the offices found mainly in our town, well, the interesting what people complain would say, the heads are always having a better fight. People who suffer the most are always in the service of affiliate or whatever it may be. I don't know what can you do, you know. You mentioned the constituency offices, the meeting multiple centers. I mean, there are many other offices. For you not to expand, you need to go to region. Is it a question of shortage of staff or what is it? Because to be in town on the rest, it needs the head who will be able to drive wherever. As you say in Parliament, what working in our place, we minimize having happy medicine in Parliament. So we go out to people's families and give them the permissions, because if one to have happy medicine in Parliament, we know the ones who have only the health won't be able to fly in and out serving the permission. But people who are, as I said, some of them don't even know what they're telling where their Parliament is. Now the question is whether these officers in town, can't you, don't you have an idea of extending them to any satellite offices in some other region? These questions I'm asking, I'd like to respond to other members of the team. My main question is that this is the time when the Tamil sector is taking place. I don't see if Tamil will allow us. Now, this is a good one. Yes, this is a point. Whose rights were violated? He applied for an IC. He stayed for years waiting for it. He had passed his diploma at the college. Some company don't want to employ him, but unfortunately he doesn't have an IC. Out of frustration, he took a toy gun, went to Home Affairs office, and said, now give me my ID. Give me my ID, we are in court. With a toy gun. Unfortunately, the court didn't know that it was a toy gun. But when it was later cornered, they discovered that it was a toy gun. But of course, it was an offense because the parents had done something, you know, any intimidation. Yeah, it's been punished for it. Now, how do you agree about this one? Some of us, we think this is a boy or the Lord from the Department of Home Affairs and from a justice system, because the girl who was sentenced 5 years for simply crying. To get an IT for so that he can support his family. Just to get an IT. He couldn't get it. Until he used wrong from him. Again, what I'm going to say, if we see the commission bring a noise about it. We'll have to hear you say something about some of these things. You know? Yes, that's the memo of wrong person. But I'm saying about some of this. Legacy by some of our departments, which is as a normal thing. So some of us are delivery, it's not an option. It's my death sentence. Again, my rifle was violated today. I was in a hurry to attend a meeting called by the minister. Now, here are roadblocks, they stopped me, and I was in a hurry. Yeah. And they couldn't let me go because there were many cars in front of me who reflected. But I thought, no, that was my time because I'm not going to a training. Because I held my time, but if I need the time within 30 minutes, I'll be there. But I was stopped. I asked myself, but where is he? What color is he? Because I was supposed to tell you that, no, now my rights have been violated because I must move freely in this road, you know, as a good citizen of this country. Did I need an opportunity to come to you? Yeah. The serious one, that's the colleague, I wonder why this is all about it. Some of the conditions in our prison, horrible. Conditions in our prison. The news I saw about it at first. I mean, you ask yourself, really, if I ask myself, but if the UN Commission can visit some of these people, have to visit this prison and see conditions under which those people are staying, who agree that they are wrong to the society. But I think they are human beings, and their rights as well, I mean, their rights will be in existence. Some of those prisons are horrible. You remember what we saw at Northwest, at Mr. Smith? what the presentation brings. Both them are done on saying. So when we have workers, this group is here, made of the corporate iron from here, you know, top to our Lord, where they, now the department of this earth, now they're done. They made a bride, that's the only way of those people, the bride there. For those people to smell that bride needs to. Do you remember the little thing? And remember, said, but why are they doing this? But let's see, one of the people that who can sample. I mean, hello. Yeah. Those would be my comments for now. Colleagues, you want a second bite, or can I allow you to remove everything so that they respond one, and then I know you're tired there, I dumped you because I called you and when you broke out, but I know you take a call from the president. I think. Can I allow you to come whenever you say?
Thank you very much. The question that I want to check on, it was what should we say? Just call up. On the issue of the fingerprint for children, when you objected to it, but saying that it's prepared to engage the rapper, was it the position of the commission or was it you? If it was the position of the commission, why they objected to that? Because the intention is to ensure that it's a database. There are records of people, and of course, it assists in terms of tracing issues that are supposed to be traced, and also you deal with people who are juveniles who are involved in crime. What is the problem in doing that? Why is it? But people have raised an issue, but also I want to emphasize this judgment that was taken by them, the judgment, clearly they are racist. Where you find an African life is cheaper than a white life, this is today's country. And I have not heard the Human Rights Commission making a comparison and saying that as a commission, we think that there is a discrimination in terms of rights of people. Because, the judgment, they are here. You have never seen a situation where a white person is killed in a bad way, and there is no outcry. But if a black person is killed, you say you are lacking like a dog. They saw that you like a dog, and they killed you. The sentence that I meet out of there is quite astounding. But to me, one of the major areas that I would think that the commission is supposed to play a role on is around the farm and farm workers. They're the most abused in the country. To them, there's no democracy. It's still the same. The men from Beautiful people do not even accept that they are still to give them, you know, the liquor as a form of payment. To ensure you remain drunk all the time. They don't know about the money. You can't count money. You can't know about money. And this goes across even the shelter, form of shelter that they are given. Very poor, unfortunately. Sometimes you are paid to a millimeter that becomes your payment at the end of the week or the month and so on. Now, to me, I think those are areas that the Human Rights Commission is supposed to look at. But moreover, to me, I would suggest that the Human Rights Commission, because I don't think you have the capacity or you ever have the capacity to reach out to the large population. My suggestion, I think, is to look at government structure and work through them in your program. Government has established work committees, social officers, with a structure that are able to reach out, which I think you must have told them, in advocating the program. Well, as well said by Bonzi, that is in the world, he has been there for years. He has never heard this program that you talk about. Then, but if you mobilize the structure that are existing, and you build partnership with them when you want to project or convey a message, I think that will help a great deal in a way in you doing your work. Of course, I must conclude by saying I think we need to talk to the commission more. I think Judy has managed to protect the commission as if you want to talk about rights, you go to Judy. But I think you must broaden leadership in terms of protecting the organization. Because it comes across now as a one-man organization. That's how it comes across. The CEO that we're talking about, that person is not visible. Jordi is everything. He's Alpha and Omega. Jordi. To me, I think the structure of the organization is important. So that doesn't come across as if it's... If you talk about Jordi, I mean, himself is a person. He has possessed himself very well. That if you talk, you know, it's like when you talk about the cold drink, talk about Coca-Cola. He has spread himself very well, so himself. If you think about human rights, Judy, I mean, in South Africa, there is no doubt. What I'm saying is that he told the commission on that report on the other cluster, CRL, that they must learn, they must take a lead from you. Learn how to position an organization. So I think you've done very well. You are not many numbers, but there's no body when you come out with another person, you know, people. Themselves, I think, on issue of culture, on language, and on religion, they must take a lead because they're new, they're established. I think you must collaborate with them. You must tell them that this committee, reinforce the message, the collaboration, how to proceed and so on, so they can do it. I said, thank you very much. Yeah, that's a good one. The example you gave is very, very exciting.
Okay.
No. On Friday, you remember me around the declarer. On Friday, there was this picture of this old man who worked in this farm for 47 years. Now, he had to retire. He's the party.
Human Rights Commission. Every problem can be a human rights problem.
and we can land up dealing with absolutely everything. And also on a daily basis, in many of our offices, we have people who are very frustrated, who have been sent from pillar to post, and they come to the Human Rights Commission as a last resort. Internally within the Commission, for example, we were not surprised at all when the Western Cape office was held hostage. That has been a disaster waiting to happen for years that we have been aware of, because people can only take so much. This is that young youth took a toy gun into the Department of Home Affairs. So we know, not so much in terms of the service that the Human Rights Commission delivers to people, but that people are frustrated, and we are seeing this coming out more and more. People are frustrated in terms of service delivery, not being able to get access to the economic and social rights, of their rights not being delivered into reality in terms of their lives, and people turn to the Human Rights Commission. So maybe then just to pick up on a number of the issues which have been raised. Issues regarding relationships with the other chapter nines. I think for the Cater Icemore Committee, we submitted quite a number of papers on this issue. But we do have very different types of relationships at different levels in different provinces with all of the chapter nines, and we do work closely with them. For the Human Rights Commission, a starting point when a member of the public approaches us is if there is another institution or organization that can offer a service or can attend to that person's problem better, or they are more well equipped or enforced in their mandate, then we automatically refer that person. And we also have different ways of referring people. Sometimes we just do a mere referral and send the person on their way. Other times we will actually monitor that referral and see what happens to it and what comes of it. And that person may always return to the Human Rights Commission if they receive no joint way to expect that thing to. I mean, we also just at different levels, be it, you know, when we have events, we will invite the CGE or the public protector if it's appropriate to invite them. Often in terms of our education and training initiative, we will actually join up with the CGE or the public protector or even IC, we've linked up with them and go out into areas so that all of people's issues can be dealt with once and for all, and that all the chapter nines are there. Because we do have very distinct mandates. So where an issue falls within the mandate of one of the other chapter nines, we would automatically refer it to them. In terms of there are a number of issues around do we litigate, don't we litigate, when do we litigate, and that's big issues which we grapple with in the Commission, I think, still to this day. In terms of our complaint mechanism, the path which we choose to use is the path of conciliation. And where we have conducted an investigation and we have made a finding of a human rights abuse, what we will attempt to do is through conciliation to find a meeting of the mind. Because in a sense, what is the point of wrapping someone on the knuckles and saying, you were naughty, don't do that again? Isn't it far better to ensure that the person understands and has an appreciation for the human rights that were violated and the harm that they caused to the person in order to ensure that it is never repeated again? And an interesting fact is that Leon Vessel, one of our commissioners, often quotes was that to date, we have only ever had one case where we have made recommendations to a party where we've made a finding against what is a human rights violation, that the party has said, we will not listen to you. And that was a church in the northern suburbs here in the Western Cape, an all-white church, and the complaint was that they would not admit persons of colour to the church, and they did. We aren't going to listen to you. And back then, we didn't have the Equality Act, so we couldn't take the matter further. Now we do have the Equality Act, that matter can be taken further. So in the whole, what it says is that people out there, when they engage with the Human Rights Commission, that they do respect the institution, they respect the findings of the institution, and that is very important. And also the fact that people come to us indicates that they do respect what it is that we do. and perhaps all the meetings or the conciliations that we have, not all of them are necessarily made public. Some of them, the term of that conciliation could be that it is held in private and that it's not made known to others. So there is a lot of work that possibly goes on behind the scenes and which one can't convey in an interaction of state. In terms of do we have enough teeth, do we have enough bite, this was an issue which was raised with the Kela Asmal committee. And it goes to the power of a commission. In terms of the human rights institution, we have a power to hold others accountable. Court of law can pass judgment and hand down a sentence which is enforceable, and that's one kind of power. The kind of power that we have more, which we rely on, is the ability to hold people accountable to their actions, but to hold them publicly accountable. And some of the issues which were put forward and which were discussed with the Kela Asmal Committee were possibly to investigate some kind of legislative changes to our founding legislation, Human Rights Commission Act, to see to what extent we could possibly at least ensure that government departments are accountable. And that when you issue reports, for example, that there is a mechanism by which they are compelled to apply to us, and compelled to apply to us within a given time. That doesn't mean that they have to use the passing down of a sentence in a court, but they have to necessarily do what it is that we have told them to do, so that we can at least hold them accountable, and that we can understand the reasons for why they disagree with us, and that we can engage with them further. So it goes to the heart and the core and the nature of the kind of power that is given to an independent body such as the Human Rights Commission. There were so many issues raised around farming communities. Perhaps just to pick up on a number of them. The farming communities, I think some of the members may have issues very close to my heart, my past life before the commission was deployed for human rights. I worked for many years in rural areas, sort of protecting people who were evicted from some farms, and so this is an issue very, very close to my heart, and I'm very much encouraged every time I interact with parliamentarians that it's clearly an issue close to their hearts as well. And we've had subsequent to today, one of the largest inquiries we had within the Commission was the inquiry into human rights violations in farming communities. And I've really engaged members to download that report. It's on our website and to actually see it. And following on from that report, we had an entire year's process where we followed up on the recommendations that were made, and we addressed issues such as issues of safety and security on farms, issues around land, issues around evictions and what happened. The role of local government, for example, where farmers are legally evicted in terms of the extension of the Security Tenure Act. Issues around the fact that why is it, for example, that when a white farm owner shot and killed, it's called farm killing and farm murders, yet we have had a whole ministerial committee of inquiry into this country which has stated categorically that there is no such crime as that which is called farm murder. And what it does is it subtracts from the dignity of those black victims who also fall victims of crime on the farm in this country. And why is it? And it's interesting that you then say that perhaps you think that the Commission has not been vocal enough to get the specific example of the farmer who shot and killed a young person and said that this person was a driver country, but also had the Commission service has not comment specifically on that case. But another case which comes to mind for example was the case up in Mpumalanga, where the farm owners tortured and killed the farm worker and then went and threw him to the lions. And I know in that case we monitored very carefully. We even sent staff to like sort of in. So I think it can be an issue of resources, as to also whether which media you comment on, whether we have commented on, but certainly these are issues in terms of farming communities, which we take extremely seriously. We had an engagement just earlier this year, and it was the second engagement we've had at a parliamentary level with the select committee in the NCRT for land. After that hearing, where we looked specifically at the issue of evictions and have we moved on these issues in South Africa. And what was concerning that was that since the writing of the Farming Inquiry report, it looks as if there's been little improvement on these issues and that the stories are still the same in this country. And that committee has said that they will take it upon themselves to assist the Human Rights Commission through its oversight role in bringing government departments who should be accountable and role players to come and hold them accountable at Parliament as to what it is that we'll be doing. And also at a higher level with the Minister for Land Affairs, there has been interactions as to what it is and to what it is, what are further issues that the Commission could be doing to take up issues of farm dwellers in this country and to resolve these issues. And after the follow-up to the Farming Inquiry, we are considering later this year to have an even further follow-up, because it just seems as this is an issue which is going to need continuous attention and engagement from the Commission, and that these issues are not going to be solved overnight. And it raises issues because we're dealing with the poorest of the poor, people who are most excluded, who cannot access services. And so from a Commission's point of view, we need to continue taking up these issues. Just an example, just today I received a report from our research department, which had been looking at farm schools in, I think it was Limpopo province, deep in Limpopo province, and just looking at issues where the learning conditions are just not acceptable, in adequate toilets, the facilities at the schools, teachers, a number of issues were raised, and the Commission has not taken that up with the provincial government and will be conducting follow-up. So where possible, where issues come to our attention, we also go out and seek these issues, we actively try and take them up. But we all know in South Africa that the challenges that face us are many, and we just need to keep working at them. And as an institution supporting democracy, we also need the support of Parliament in terms of its oversight role, and to work together with structures such as the NCRT to go down to the provinces to also assist us in terms of the work that we do. And that even though we're an independent institution, we do also join hands at times in terms of exercising that oversight role. Issues were raised around sexual offences that we should speak up more. I think that's interesting. That's another debate in the Commission. We've got the Gender Commission. Should we leave the space for them to speak, or should we claim that space as well? And that's a very interesting debate. And we have, over the years, and depending, I mean, we conducted an inquiry about 6 or 7 years ago into sexual offences services and children in the Gauteng region and in the courts there. From the school-based violence hearing, issues of young girls being raped at school, of coercive sexual relationships between teachers and learners came up in our basic education, stuff which makes your stomach turn. Teachers granting access to learners because they've come late and the gates are locked and forcing the girl child to have sex with them. These are the kinds of issues that have been raised, and they are enormous. We've had engagements with the chair of the Justice Portfolio Committee around the issues of sexual violence, but also violence in this country, and what it is that we should be doing as a commission to engage further to promote this culture of human rights. At the end of the day, it's the foundation, one of the foundational principles of our constitution, the dignity. What is it, where is it that we are going wrong in this country, that the dignity of others is not being respected by all in this country, that every day when that we turn on our televisions, these most horrendous things are being committed, and what is it that we as a commission can do? And there again, we have in Russia's perspective through our education and training, have engaged extensively with the Department of Education to infuse human rights throughout the curriculum, be it math, science, geography, you'd be surprised you can infuse it in math. And these are the kind of long-term projects that we need to keep working on to ensure that as a society in transition, where often levels of violence do rise, that we begin to address these issues systematically and we look at the hardships that we can go about doing. We'll ask issues about our provincial offices, yes, and all the problems with Cliff and Northwest. Beginning of this month at the induction, some of our Northwest Point staff were present. The lease, I believe, kicks in from the start of next month, so one is shortly going to be hearing things from the Human Rights Commission about our Northwest Point. We're about to open doors there within coming months. But in terms of the size of our provincial offices, they are small if you consider the mandate of the commission. They're essentially made up of a provincial manager, an admin person, the legal officer, the education officer. They now have three interns assisting, a housekeeper. So there are small units in the provinces with an enormous amount of work to do. And these are issues which are continuously being debated in the commission, and just yesterday was announced that we're going to have another massive internal debate come July on the role of provincial officers, what it is that they should be doing, how they can work more effectively, whether we should be making them larger. These are all issues that internally within the commission we are continuously alive to. How can we go about implementing our mandate more effectively? And reaching the people to this committee seems to be very concerned about in terms of accessibility. How is it that we actually reach people out there? And the sort of challenge I want to throw out and the kind of thinking and the sort of assistance and ideas I think we need in the commission is not so much, is it an issue of how many people, how many offices, where the offices are? Because then we would need a whole army. What are the things that we can do? How can we be imaginative to have minimum input, maximum benefit out there? How is it that we should, for example, be using our community radio stations more effectively? Because people in those deep rural areas listen to those community radios in local languages. How is it in many of our provincial offices that do have permanent slots on the provincial radio? But is there more that we can do? Should we be engaging, for example, with the producers of If You Didn't Go and see how they can pass right in the Human Rights Commission into one of their programs? We know what enormous following those programs have. You know, is it through the schools that we should be doing more work? What are some of the ideas that we can work with the minimum resources we've got? Because we know that our budget is not going to be quadrupled or times by 20 overnight. We have to work with the resources that we've got. But what is it that we can do to reach more people out there and to reach them effectively? I mean, this is one of the reasons why we are just so excited about this new e-learning program we have got. And when it's up and running, we'd be more than welcome to come and brief this committee on that e-learning, because it's really going to open up a whole new world of soft learning for people out there, where they can sit in their homes or go to the multi-purpose community centers where their internet links, okay, and they can actually learn about human rights at different levels. In terms of what their needs are. speakers to try and find some of the more broader areas. I know what Max Burford writes, I know just because I'm based down here in the Cape Town Office of Education, Office of Office, quite a lot last year. Hopefully you go back and you speak to some of the community organisations on the ground. I know that she spent quite a lot of time there. And you see, that's one education officer from a provincial office, you know, who took on the Burford West community last year. And those are the ways where we want to try and work is, let's go to one community and let's really give them a quality in-depth service where not only do you go tell the person you've got a right to a social grant, okay, right, that's in the constitution, but let's arrange that program with the Department of Home Affairs and let's get some mobile clinics out there as well. And let's ensure that once people have learned about that right, that they can then afterwards also be able to enforce the right and to be able to have access immediately to the Department of Home Affairs, who is there to assist them, to ensure that they get the ID documents and that the children can register and that they get the child grant, the support grant. So these are the kinds of ways in which we are thinking of working. And in other areas, I mean, again, exposure on a daily basis, there are things happening every day. The street person who died. I just know that, again, that in terms of disaster management, some of our officers have actually got very good. The moment they hear, for example, there's been flooding out in the Cape Flats, Western Cape Disaster Management knows they get a phone call from the Human Rights Commission. And the moment it's in the newspaper and it looks as if, or if it's been particularly bad, they're in the commission's car, they're out there, they can walk about, they are speaking to the people to find out. They're not going to speak to the officials, they're going to speak to the people first. We know now what it is that people are entitled to when there's been a disaster, and we check that they have received the blankets, they have received the warm meal, that women and men are being kept separately, that the children are being adequately looked after, and that we go out there and we actually see that people are receiving those services, and we engage and we make it known to local government and provincial government that they are in fact being monitored. So they know fires, the other times when we often get called out quite a lot and we actually go out there. Equality courts, issues are raised about equality courts and then also again about prior. But to do equality courts fit, again, the commission has done briefings in the National Assembly to adapt the portfolio committee last year. There was a review of equality and there's a report which that committee has just brought out and we made submissions and we made input. The commission is concerned about equality courts. They're just not working the way we thought they would. People don't seem to know about them, people don't seem to be able to access them. It was when the legislation was drafted, we thought it was going to be this user-friendly system where people could walk into a court anywhere throughout the country and use it, and it just doesn't seem to be working. We've set up a unit, we are constantly monitoring, we are engaging with the department, but we really are going to have to, I think, start engaging in the debate about how people who have been victimized through discrimination, how is it that we are going to empower people to come forward? The courts are there, the people have been trained. People can walk in any day. They can walk out now. When the court opens tomorrow morning, they can walk in. And we know that acts of discrimination are occurring still on a daily basis in this country. But how are we going to empower people who have been victims of discrimination to come forward and to speak out? Why is it that many of the cases that we have had, it's been Jody Collison going when he couldn't get his hair cut, okay? It's been Pierre de Fox, a university lecturer from UWC. You know, when is it that the ordinary person in this country, be it a he or a she, will be able to walk into that equality court and say, I have been discriminated against, or start using these wonderful mechanisms which we have actually put in place? There were questions about Hayir, and also Hayir as well. It's also just not working the way that we had anticipated that it would work, and there are enormous issues there as well, which the Commission is particularly concerned with.
Okay, the ASMAR committee has been looking at this issue very seriously, and I think we can expect to see some pronouncements or reduced comments coming out of that committee, because we were requested for some very specific and quite in-depth information around our thinking as to what should be done to address the challenges concerning Kaya, and whether, for example, we should be setting up an independent information commissioner that can deal with complaints regarding the lack of response very often from the people from whom information is requested. So I think these are issues which Kayla Asmar Committee is very much charged with at the moment. A number of issues were also just raised around matters around health, and I mean, just to say very broadly, the members may be aware that the week before last, I think there was a very well-publicized public hearing which we had for 3 days on the right of access to healthcare services. And many of the issues that have been raised here today were raised at that hearing as well. The minister herself even came and sat in on those hearings for 2 of the days, which I think indicates the kind of seriousness with which many of the role players take, and many of the issues of lack of access to healthcare, people just falling out of the system because they can't afford transport to get to a hospital, and what has been done about that? They're not being medicines at hospitals, and people are at all these issues that I brought to the fore. So I think we can look forward to the Commission digesting that information and for a report coming out. Jacob's post, I mean, really, just to respond to that, I mean, the Commission does fall within the range of normal. Yes, people leave the Commission for greener pastures, and a lot of people say that in terms of the level that at which people are pitched in the Commission, it's too low, that very often we can't even compete with government, that in order to compete with government, we would have to almost automatically just raise everyone who's currently got up one level. Again, these are issues which have been looked at seriously by HR currently, also by our CEO, in order to look at what it is that we can do around salary restructuring. Again, we've got a budget. We've also got policies which we're currently discussing around retention of staff and staff retention to keep them at the Commission. Because for staff to come to the Commission for a year and for them to leave, the Commission has not got any value out of that person yet. You need to employ a person for a minimum of 2 years before they really start producing. So issues around staff retention, the Commission is currently taking very, very seriously. The quick go around us, okay. Issues around the victim fund, I mean, I think that's been discussed in a number of arenas, and the Commissioner said that this is something on which in terms shouldn't just deal with it in terms of setting up a fund for victims, but we should be looking at victims' rights more broadly, and that could be one issue to be discussed, and that we need to look at the victims' charter. Do we work with the ICD? Yes, we often refer cases to the ICD. We do follow and follow up with them, but if the issue falls within the ICD's mandate, then we actually refer the matter on. Interactive ODAC, yes, from the smiles of lots and lots. There's a lot of interaction that goes on with ODAC, and I think we enjoy a very good relationship with the organization. I'm not going to go into issues around what's the debate going on between the Commission and the Deputy Minister of Justice. I think when we appeared before the Justice Portfolio, Committee was agreed at that meeting that those issues would not be discussed, because there are various things that are currently going on between the chair of that portfolio committee, the chair of the Human Rights Commission, and the Deputy Minister. So I don't think, I know Jody Royer himself, he would also take time from commenting to speak on that matter at the moment. And then issues around the Minister of intelligence and potential hate speech, I mean, I think today the commission is like really starting to establish a jurisprudence around the issue of hate speech. We've had a number of cases. We have the case of the killed farmer, killed a boy, which most people know, where we found that that was hate speech, and we're building the jurisprudence around the area of one needs to look at the circumstances in which the speech is said. So you may have a phrase, it doesn't mean every time you say that phrase that constitutes hate speech. You need to look at the overall circumstances in which you're saying. The recent John Casual's method that got referred to the commission, there's a lot of public debate because we in fact found as a commission that there's not hate speech. Okay, in other words, fair and just comment on issues, okay? So yeah, it depends on each method which comes to the commission and we consider it and we're building up steadily a jurisprudence on this issue. Issues around I'm sorry that you're right to violate it, we had to go and vote on a bill. I think I know which bill it is. Yes, if you had come to us and in particularly the parliamentary program, I'm sure if we had engaged sufficiently you would have been able to comply with the demands of your party. But if you still felt uncomfortable with the demands of your party, I would suggest that that's more an internal matter. We just have to tell us Adam. And then we just see, I think issues around, I find it interesting that the issue around the hostage crisis with the IRD, you know, has been raised. And what is concerning to the commission, it seems to be, it's almost a trend that is starting to happen in South Africa, of where people are frustrated that they're getting so desperate that they are taking people hostage. There was the incident with the newspaper up in Pretoria. We had an incident here in Cape Town on the weekend where someone was killed. And there's been a lot of internal discussion within the commission as to, yes, you can understand, but yes, it's also wrong. And how do you deal with it? And how do you deal with it in a compassionate manner? I mean, just from our side at the commission, the impact on our staff within the Western Cape has been enormous. It cannot be underestimated. We've had a number of staff who had to take time off to cope and to come to terms with what has happened. Most of the staff have been engaged in debriefing and counselling. And the effect, yes, one can understand why some can feel so frustrated that they arrive intentionally at an office with a gun, that they pull the gun up, that they want to hold the entire office hostage to make a political statement. But the effect and the impact that has on those people and their families cannot be underestimated. So yes, from a human rights perspective, yes, we want to be compassionate, but at the same time we need to send out a very clear message as to what is acceptable ways in a constitutional democracy, because there are avenues and mechanisms to take up issues. The irony of what happened in the Western Cape office is that the commission has in fact entered as an amicus, a friend of the court, in a constitutional court matter, okay, where the issue of pensions of 1665 is going to be determined. So there was no need, but you know, very often I think people feel frustrated because things just don't happen quickly enough. I'm just running through, I think I have managed to answer most questions. There were also issues around farms. I found the comments on dirty collagen interesting. Maybe that's why in terms of to empower people in the commission and to empower women listening to media today, I hope I've managed to cope adequately. I mean, if people would like any further information on any of the issues, we'll be more than pleased to get that. Thank you.
the solution for responding to our patients. It is very interesting, it's in Chile, my city. You can see it is very interesting. We need a lot of patients always. Need the position, where will I be? In the whole day, they have to talk about the machine. I think look at the day one day where we think that we talk about the whole thing. It's very interesting. Thank you so much for the point. It's very, very interesting. Yeah. I think we're done. And we're done with the bandwidth, I think. It's not going to be able to do it. It's very easy to do money. But this number is here, they are very different. I wonder if you look at that before this meeting. I'm not so interested. But I'm going to tell you that that's very, very good. Yeah. Having said that, I think what has remained for me to do now before I allow my own with the relative place that I can have. I think we're closing now. We do this to agenda items of the implementation. But after that, the commitment was that one item that they would not take, don't get up with in the company. Yeah. Now, besides the phone call that we said, there are very much in short that we put in.
Thank you for. I mean, thank you for the opportunity and certainly some of the issues, well, all the issues that were raised here will go back to the Commission. I think being head of the parliamentary program, I think to date there has not been enough engagement with the NCRT committee and possibly a confusion around the purpose of this meeting today. And I think that it is important for the Commission to begin the relationship with all the committees, and particularly this committee in the NCRT. And I think the idea of the Commission coming and spending a day, because one can just hear from the questions that have been asked, there are so many questions that members have that they would like to engage with the Commission on. And we would certainly welcome such a meeting and to be able to sit and thrash out issues and to hear questions from the committee. And we'd really welcome it because it really is a very good exercise for the Commission as well to look at ourselves in the mirror and to see how it is and to see how people view us and where they think it is that we should be doing more, and for us to take that back and reflect on it. So certainly the discussion that we have had here today will be taken back to the Commission and they will be considered very seriously, not just by Jodie Collison and Kadisa Tipanyani, but more widely by all the commissioners and by all the senior management of the Commission. So I'd really like to thank the committee for this opportunity.
Thank you very much, John, for having me on the podcast today. I'll make a day when we'll come and talk to us as well. How about what I'm doing? One day, I think I will do that company just to hear what I'm doing, because we can engage you more.
We would really welcome that, Chef.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Chair. Well, we would thank the presence of Open Democracy Ambassador in office. Well, you have not been exposed much to the rigor and the rigor of the committee meeting today. Hopefully, as we are looking at building partnership
your own experiences. Not at the details, also to yourself. When we engage in that process, there is oversight for you. But the matter of things, then once you send the commission and say that today the enemy was tired. If with more time, we would have had an in-depth discussion. That's why we need that forum where we are to engage each other as partners, not as us and them, but as partners. Of course, we guard jealously our independence as the legislative body, and your independence as our, because you are our creation. You know, we created you as a head, came with the law and said, okay, you were this, this. But also, we respect that, that your independence. Then, in saying so, we hope that in the next meeting, your leadership will be there to engage with it. Because I must tell you that I'm always amazed by Jody, the way he's bringing the thread. You know, he's like Jan Kambo. I mean, Jan Mbo. FNGV. He's taken over by FNGV. When he's come back, he's Jan Mbo. There's no other person who makes this time. Now I'm saying that sometimes those good skills have to be learned and very well. Thank you very much for here. Thank you very much,
Yeah, on that note, for the commission and everybody, CMC and all the So I will suppose that you will